I'd like to ask everyone to please take their seats and remind everyone to silence their cell phones, which I will do now, and all your electronic devices. I figured I should do the same, huh? So I'd like to call the Children, Families, and Seniors Committee to order. Will Aaron, our administrative assistant, please call the roll?
Chair Altman.
Here.
Representatives Bartleman.
Here.
Borrero.
Here.
Brannon, excused. Casello.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes,
ma'am. Coster.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Robinson.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Saroy. Excused. Trabulsi. Excused. Valdez.
Present.
Williams.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. I want to remind everyone we have a new sound system. It's very sensitive. It allows you to speak with the mask, and it will pick you up. Also, it will pick you up if you leave it on and anything you say to your neighbor or to yourself or anyone. So beware of the open mic phenomenon. Make sure you turn them off when you get through. I am deeply honored to be named by Speaker Sprouse to chair this subcommittee, and all of you should be honored to be appointed by him. We are very, very fortunate at this time and place to have Speaker Sprouse. He has a significant commitment to this committee and our mission. We will have a lot of things to do, which is a good thing. Remember when he spoke in the organizational sessions, he brought up the issues that we will be addressing. So put your seatbelt on and get ready. We're going to have a great session and hoping we can do a lot of good things. A little bit of information about our jurisdiction. I know the staff has done a wonderful job in giving us some of the information, but I'll quickly go over some of the jurisdictional issues in my opening remarks. But what we really do is we confront many of the issues that affect most vulnerable individuals in our society. And this committee and our staff and our predecessors have done a lot of good work and given us a lot of good things to work with. And we will we'll be hearing some of those here today as a starting off point. First, though, I'd like to recognize our vice chair, Representative Roth, who I've worked with in the past, and recognize him to say a few words.
Thank you, Chair Altman, for those inspiring words. This is my third year on this committee, and I have to tell you this. This is the committee that brings tears to our eyes and hope to our hearts. And looking forward to serving with you, Chair. Thank you.
Might mention that Representative Roth was vice chair last year as well, so he brings to us a great deal of experience. Also, like to recognize Representative Valdez, our ranking Democrat member, to say a few words.
Thank you very much, Chair Altman and Vice Chair Roth. I too am very excited to be on this committee. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Speaker Sprouse and leaders DeBose and Jenny for the opportunity to serve as ranking member. I believe that because this particular pandemic that we are in today, this particular committee has a lot of work to do in taking care of our most vulnerable populations back home. So I'm looking forward to doing the heavy lifting with you all and keeping in mind our children, our families, and our seniors, which need us more now than ever. So thank you very much for this opportunity. And again, I'm looking forward to working with each and every one of you on the issues that we care deeply about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Valdez. And I'm so excited to have you as our ranking member. We've worked together before, and it's wonderful to have you here. Next, I'd like to ask each subcommittee member to introduce themselves and say a few things about themselves and maybe some of your vision on this committee. We will start on the back row from left and move to right, and then we'll go to the front row, left to right.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
My name is Representative David Borrero. I represent District 105. I was a former city commissioner prior to having served as a state rep, and I actually served Sweetwater as our grants manager, and just kind of looking through our member our briefing over here, see some of the funds that we have available to meet some of the needs of residents, such as OAA, and let me tell you, these are very much needed resources that people take advantage of, and so I'm privileged and blessed to be able to serve on this committee, and I look forward to working with all of the members on this committee, Republican and Democrat alike.
Hi, my name is Robin Bartleman, and I represent District 104, and it is such a blessing to be on this committee. I am so excited. I started out as a special education teacher, an assistant principal down in Liberty City, a city commissioner, and for the last 16 years, a school board member. So I'm excited to have the opportunity to serve children, families, and seniors in our community, and I look forward to working with you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Joe Casello, District 90, that's Palm Beach County area. I, too, am happy to serve on this committee, Mr. Chair, and hopefully we can bring more smiles than tears through our work here in this committee, as my colleague, Rep. Roth, had mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Altman. My name is Tom Fabricio, House District 103. It runs from Southwest Broward to Northwest Miami-Dade County. It truly is an honor to be on this committee. We do really need to look out for the children, families, and seniors in the state of Florida. Thank you so much.
Hi there, Tracy Coster. I represent House District 64. I am a marital and family law attorney. So this committee is hits close to home for me. I see what our children and families are going through on a daily basis through my work, and I look forward to doing some good work for the state in this subcommittee. So thank you for the opportunity.
Good afternoon, Spencer Roach. I represent House District 79, which is one of only two House districts in the state, which is wholly unincorporated. So there are 412 municipalities in Florida. I represent none of them. But I do cover eastern and northern unincorporated Lee County, retired Coast Guard officer, judge advocate, and this is my second tour of duty here on children, families, and seniors. Love working in this space, and I'm also a guardian ad litem as well as a licensed foster parent as well. So look forward to working with the secretary here and the committee to keep the gateway of hope open. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Sam Killebrew from District 41, and being the most senior person here, I'm really interested in what this committee can do for me. So I'm having an enjoyable time being here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Patricia Williams from District 92, which is part of Broward County. I am a foster parent, a guardian ad litem, and a great advocate for children that's in need. Thank you.
Mine keeps coming back on.
Chair, I think they're all out. This whole row.
Is this one work? Yeah, this one works.
Okay, we want to have you on live mic. We need to do that, especially since. There's a mic right there. Okay, good. See if you can find.
Good afternoon, Felicia Robinson. I represent House District 102, which covers two counties. South Broward and North Miami-Dade. I'm an educator, and this committee is I'm very passionate about it when we're working with children, family, and seniors. I've had some history with foster care, and if we can get this right in this committee, I think we'll do a really great job in making stronger communities. So I'm very happy to be here, and hopefully we can do some good here.
Good afternoon. My name is Marie Woodson, and I represent District 101, which is part of South Broward County. I'm a privilege and honor to be serving in this committee. I'm a former public administrator for Miami-Dade County government, which is one of the largest county in the state of Florida, where I had the privilege to serve seniors and family as well. So I hope collectively we can continue to serve our children and families and seniors in order for them to continue to prosper. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Brett Haig, and I'm the District 33 representative. I represent Sumter County, a portion of Lake County, and a portion of Marion County, and I represent the villages. So seniors are near and dear to my heart. That's the majority of my constituents, and I'm excited to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm Representative Jason Fisher from House District 16, which is in Jacksonville. I'm a former school board member. I'm an engineer by background, and I chair the Government Operations Subcommittee. And so my big interest on this committee is the nexus of the state agencies and the special districts around the state that are in charge of handling children, family, and seniors. And so, you know, as we look at the structure and function and procedures of agencies, I'm particularly interested in more information about that. So I may ask a lot of questions, Mr. Chairman, as we go along, just kind of let you know in advance, but I'm grateful to be on this committee. It's my first time serving on children, family, and seniors, and I'm looking forward to a great couple committee weeks and a great session. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think we got everyone. No one coming late. Thank you for that input. I'm excited about the makeup, the individuals on this committee. We have a great group of members. Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about myself, why I'm here. I've worked in the field a little bit. I was a vice chair of this committee in the Senate, served in the Senate, formerly served under Chairman Harrell in the House. This is an area that I think is close to all of our hearts and affects people. You know, you're on a lot of policy committees, right? And they have an impact, but the Financial Budgeting Appropriation Committee seem to have the most impact. But here is different. This is a committee where policy makes huge differences in people's lives. So from a policy perspective, you could not have a more impactful committee to sit on. It's very, very important and very meaningful. So I'm excited about being here. I am. Next, I'd like to introduce our subcommittee. Is very fortunate. We're served by some fantastic staff members, and most of them are not here. I encourage you anytime, stop by our suite on the second floor. It's quite a large suite with a lot of staffers. The scope and breadth of this committee is wide and large, and we have a good team up there. We have a couple I'd like to recognize. First, our policy chief for the subcommittee, Hillary Brazel. Hillary and I have worked together in other capacities before, and she is a real asset to us, and I encourage you to call on her to take advantage of her and all of our other staff. And as well, we have the administrative assistant, Aaron Osborne here. So both Aaron and Hillary are there to serve, and they have a lot of good technical experience and input as well. And they'll be happy to be of assistance to you anytime, so please do not hesitate to call. As many of you are new to the subcommittee, I wanted to review some of its jurisdiction. We would be here past our time allotment if I went through all of it. But it's broad and addresses some of the biggest challenges affecting families in our state. First, the Department of Elderly Affairs, Agency for Persons with Disabilities, and the Department of Children and Families are the key agency under its jurisdiction. It includes child welfare, mental health, substance abuse, safety net services, domestic violence, individuals with certain developmental disabilities in the community, oversight of guardians, Alzheimer's disease initiatives, and provisions for elderly community services, just to name a few. To help you learn more about the subcommittee jurisdiction, a briefing booklet is being delivered to your Tallahassee office. I also recommend that you view videos from last term where the agency representatives provided an overview during the initial subcommittee meetings. I will provide information by email about how to do so. And the Florida Channel does a beautiful job. I mean, their archival committee meeting information and video is just tremendous. And feel free to that's open to the public, and it's very helpful to do so. First, I'd like to go to our first presentation. Now, as you know, things are quite different. This presentation will be done remotely. And to help you to begin to become familiar with the individuals in these leading agencies, I'd like to recognize Director Barbara Palmer of APD to briefly introduce herself. Welcome, Director Palmer, you're recognized. We look forward to having you back, and so we'll take you up on your offer. And thank you for taking time to appear virtually. So next, I'd like to introduce Secretary Popple of Department of Children and Families. Secretary Chad Popple of DCF will introduce himself to us, and then his colleagues will present on the implementation of Senate Bill 1326, passed in the 2020 session. Secretary Popple, we are so fortunate to have you where you are, and we've had an opportunity to chat, been immensely impressed, and looking forward to working with you the next two sessions.
Chair, thank you so much. I enjoyed our time together and where your heart is on our issues. And I've had the privilege of working with a number of you. I'm looking forward to sitting down and meeting with the rest of you and trying to find out what your priorities are.
Secretary Popple, I want to be sure we have your mic on. We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you up here. Okay, we're going to get your volume up if we can. It's green. It seems always green.
It's controlled over here now.
Okay. Oh. Okay, give us another sound check.
How's this?
A little better.
Better?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, is that good?
Yeah, talk directly in, Will.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And so it's a privilege, and I've had the opportunity, again, to meet with many of you and ranking member. We spent some time together with a classroom full of children, so that's always exciting. So I just want to make sure you know the door is open. Some of the comments that were made earlier in the open, I know it's not the subject of conversation here today, but certainly COVID has greatly expanded the numbers of folks in need around the state. And so I do think that's a conversation worth having. I was able to cover some of it yesterday in the Senate. I'd love to cover it with you. But as you can imagine, the number of people on public assistance has grown considerably. We've got issues across the programs that we run, our community substance abuse and mental health networks for the uninsured, the child welfare system, adult protective services, our homeless work. Across each one of those areas, they all have unique challenges right now, and so we look forward to the help. And it's something we want to do together and let you know what we're doing and what the challenges are out there in the communities that we serve. So with that, I did want to also start off, you mentioned staff, Mr. Chair, Hillary and team. Last year was a big year for the agency, and we got a lot done, and I wanted to give a special thanks to the team that kind of rallied around the issues. The work we did last session really, you know, it started with the governor and first lady and President Simpson, Speaker Sprawls, Speaker Oliva at the time. It really became a leadership conversation we had across the board. And so Representative Fisher, you mentioned an interest in the model, and I don't want to bore everyone, but we really spent a lot of time on the model last year. And I wanted, particularly in child welfare, I wanted to kind of cover some of the ground that we made up and then move right into one of the biggest accomplishments that we got done legislatively and let you see the progress that's being had. Because I think we all share the same goal. When we get involved in someone's life, things should get better for them. If it's a child, they should be safer. You know, if it's somebody that's struggling financially, we should give them a hand up and some support and help them get back on their feet. So with that, last session we approached this committee with three things. Can we fundamentally answer the question, have we resourced the child welfare system correctly? Is DCF doing what it's supposed to be doing in driving performance in an outsourced system? So just for you to know, DCF largely does the investigative part of child welfare. We do have seven counties where sheriffs, they are doing the investigations for us. And then once a child comes to our care, they move to our CBCs, or our lead agencies, you'll hear them called. But these are 17 different organizations around the state that it's a community-based care model. And so there's a lot of good things about that model. We're one of the best child welfare systems in the country. I can say that without hesitation. There's data to back it up. But we do have issues. We do have issues. And then three, can you trust that you know how it's going? Because I'm going to come up here, or somebody behind me is going to come up here and say, I need more money. Just give me more money, it'll get better. Or if you make this change, it'll get better. We need to build a level of trust. And so the third part we wanted, how can we put some strategies together where you would know how it's going? Without having to ask me, you could go and check. And so we put a bill together. We called it the DCF Accountability Act. It quickly became much more than that. Thanks to leadership's involvement in their priorities. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about that second piece,
which is what's DCF's role in driving performance and making sure the right things are happening on the ground. And I can tell you that one of my first, well, actually it was the week before I started, we had a very tragic case where the entire system fell down around a child. It was the Jordan Beliveau case down in the Tampa area. And that really, like I said, it was the week before I started, it kind of drove a lot of the activity. What's going on? And so we do have a system that if we're not collaborating, it could easily become fractured. The right hand wouldn't know what the left hand is doing. We did have that problem. And DCF is pretty far removed from the work going on, particularly from a standpoint of quality assurance. We had given away a lot of our quality assurance resources over a period of time. And in fact, our providers were providing the majority of the information on how things are going to us. DCF had kind of stepped back. I found that to be highly problematic, as did the governor. DCF should be driving the quality efforts in this system of care, particularly an outsourced system of care. And so one of the stats I gave last year, you know, we were looking at less than 1% of child welfare cases. As an independent group, we're looking at less than 1%. And most of those reviews were after the fact. The casework had already taken place. There wasn't a lot of opportunity to intervene and change course. And so one of the most exciting things I'm happy for you guys to hear from our chief quality officer in a moment on is exactly that. We have changed that dynamic radically. We are looking at vastly more cases, and we are now looking at the cases over their entirety. We call it a life of the case. And we are able to pick up the phone and say, whoa, 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 you missed something. You need to go back and change X, Y, Z. And so we're already seeing the positive effects of that in the system. We also did a ton of work. I mentioned that we do have some constitutional officers that do some work for us, 7 sheriffs that do the front end work. We have a state attorney and the attorney general in 2 counties. They do our children's legal services work. Representative, I was paying attention. Most of that work is usually done by the department. I'm happy to report and announce today that I've been working with Attorney General Moody for the better part of the last year and a half, and she is very interested, and we have recommended that she return those 2 counties that she does the CLS work back to DCF. And so it's an issue where we want to get a little bit closer to the work. These were set up as a pilot in statute. And very early on, she brought me in and started this conversation. And so I think that's another effort for us to get a little bit closer to the work and make sure we have our hands in what's going on. So I'm very excited about where we're going. I'm very thankful for the work that was done for those of you here last year. As you know, this was hard work, and we got it done, and everyone has responded well. A lot of progress and great collaboration with the sheriffs. I do want to thank them, our providers, et cetera. So with that, Mr. Chair, I was going to introduce our Chief Quality Officer to walk you through, and I have forgotten to hit the button. I just started talking and didn't hit my buttons. I'm sorry. But we wanted to walk through the Quality Office and some of the work that has been done. And then I will be available for questions at the end. We'll go from there, unless there's questions now, sir.
Let's do this. Let's go through the whole presentation, and
yes, sir.
We'll ask members to ask their questions at the end. So I know some members have approached me; they have questions. So
yes, sir. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Secretary. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. As Secretary Popple mentioned, my name is Jessica Kemper, and I'm the department's Chief Quality Officer. I also want to extend my gratitude to Krista and Hillary and the entire HHS team, who has been instrumental over the last year while we were building this bill. And we look forward to continuing to work with you all and gain your insight as we continue to build out our processes. So thank you for that. I've been with DCF for more than 5 years in a variety of roles. I've served as the communications director and the chief of staff. I was honored in 2019 when Secretary Popple created this office and asked me to serve as the Chief Quality Officer, and I'm really excited to talk to you all this afternoon about some of the great work that we've been doing since the bill passed last session. So to begin, building the quality office, this was a huge change for the department, a big shift in the way that we do our work, particularly in the child welfare system. This slide outlines the priorities that we had as we were building the quality office within the department. Having well-defined roles and responsibilities between our operations team out in the field, our program offices at headquarters, and the quality office was instrumental, so we make sure we understand where we all fit into the puzzle. From that, we also had department strategy to align with, as well as the tenets of Senate Bill 1326. One key tenet of Senate Bill 1326 that I want to highlight today is the charge to strengthen the data and analytical capability of the department, which we're absolutely doing. And as Secretary Popple mentioned, we do have very deep stakeholder engagement, working with our sheriff's office partners regularly, our case management and our CBC lead agency teams, as well as the CLS partners across the state. So with all of that, we built the quality office into three primary units. We have a data and analytics unit, an education and training team, and by far our largest unit is our quality review team. And the budget last year authorized DCF to transfer 125 positions within the department to create the quality office, which we did. And part of that movement and creation of this new office was a culture change. Change is hard for all of us, and a change of this nature in such a large institution has been a challenge that we've been excited to embark on and are still working through. But with that, we needed to set a very specific culture for the quality office while we moved people from other parts of the department onto the team, hired new members as well. We needed a cohesive team. And with that, we built out the quality office culture to be action-focused, collaborative, and transparent. We have a lot of really smart statisticians on our team, and we know that we need to balance that science with the speed that we need to deliver real results to the field. We want to be collaborative, and we have to be collaborative. We always want to share everything we find and listen very carefully to what our partners are telling us that they need. And transparency, always essential in the work that we do. We're going to give real feedback when we have concerns, but we're also celebrating the good work that we see across the state. A main component of building the quality office, again, was taking results-oriented accountability to the next level. Results-oriented accountability, or ROA as we call it in the department, may be familiar to some of you if you've worked in this committee before, but this is a tenet in law that was passed in 2014 for the child welfare system, and you'll see this graphic, the cycle of accountability that we talk about through the presentation, because we used it as a theme in building the quality office. ROA provided infrastructure for the department to really use its data better. It built a data team in the Office of Child Welfare. It built a data environment for them to work in with all the information that we have as a data-rich agency, and the dashboards that you see on our public-facing website, if you've seen those before. So we took the tenets of ROA and built out the quality office processes to mirror that through monitoring, program improvement, and evaluation of ourselves. So as I mentioned, the quality review team is our largest unit, and it's really important, as the secretary said, to understand why we're doing these reviews. We really need more insight into the quality of the work at the front line from the department's perspective. We also want to be able to take that information that we're gaining from our quality reviews, process it into actionable data that we can hand to our operations team for them to use in real time to help manage their operations. We're also, with looking at cases in real time, we're addressing immediate safety concerns when we see them to help prevent bad outcomes. The last line you see there about diverting individuals from deep end services, we are looking forward to also setting up a behavioral health team in coordination with our managing entity partners to look at community behavioral health and substance abuse cases, and our goal will primarily be diversion from deep end services like institutionalization. Then and now. So before Senate Bill 1326, the department primarily did limited and siloed case reviews. As Secretary Popple mentioned, we were looking at less than 1% of our cases. We had very narrow populations that were sampled for reviews, and a lot of them were done after the fact. We've taken all of those tools in a post-1326 environment. The rapid safety feedback review tool that was previously used, our federal child and family services review tools that we're still using. And we built a life of case review tool, kind of a one to rule them all. Our design is to pick up an investigation if it meets our sample criteria, assign it to an expert child welfare quality reviewer. They pick up the case and they keep it the life of the case. If the investigation closes, it comes off their review load. If the investigation transfers to case management because the child is found to be unsafe, that same reviewer keeps the case. So we're looking at cases while they're open through the trajectory of the case when we have the child. We also have a team who does targeted reviews, which they are looking at special populations in the department, such as independent living or specific to a certain type of maltreatment. And they are also in charge of our federal children and family services review. And as discussed last session, our goal is to review 5% of our child welfare cases in the department. This, just very briefly, our life of case review intervals and our key areas of focus. So a reviewer will be assigned an investigation and begin the review for looking at present danger assessment and commencement activities at the 10-day mark of the investigation. When that reviewer is finished reviewing the case, the tool goes to our operations team members so they can see what we found. That same reviewer will pick up the same investigation at day 30 and at closure, which is usually about 60 days per statute. And again, if that case goes to ongoing case management, they'll pick up the case again 7 to 10 days after transfer, look at it about another month in, and keep looking at it every 30 to 90 days, depending on the circumstances of the case, for the life until it's closed and that child reaches permanency. So what have we done so far? To date, the Quality Office has already reviewed more than 2,500 child welfare cases. And that's since the office was established and we started moving these reviews along last year. Of those 2,500 cases, about 300 of those were identified as requiring immediate child safety action. And those are cases that we immediately contact the field because one of our reviewers has seen something that's very concerning for the safety of the child. And we request our operations team in the field to take action within 48 hours, and then we go back into our data system, our child welfare information system, and see what actions were taken. Of those 300, we've had 15 new reports called into the hotline to initiate new investigations. Excuse me. We've also had 16 cases where the children were removed from unsafe homes. Now, I want to be clear, the Quality Office is not directing operations specifically on what actions to take. When we send a case for immediate safety concern, we give them all the information that we have from the expert reviewer, and we offer a consultation where we can talk through the issues of safety that we saw or give them an opportunity to push back and say, well, you didn't see this information and we've done XYZ, and we can talk through that. An example, one of the cases that resulted in a removal that the Quality Office saw was of an infant. A baby was living at home with a very young mother and a young grandmother who were both heavy substance abusers. We alerted operations immediately to that concern that we saw. They went back out and determined that home was not safe for the baby and removed that baby into a safe foster home. So those are the type of outcomes that we're hoping to influence. We'll never be able to tell you exactly what we prevented, but we are seeing some very good stories already out of the quality reviews. From those 300, very early on, we also deployed a performance improvement team to see why are so many cases not addressing the safety action and needing more. Through our data analysis and some focus groups that were set up with frontline investigators and supervisors, we found that a case that has insufficient supervisory guidance is 6 times more likely to result in needing immediate safety action on a quality review. So we're currently working through that performance improvement project to validate root causes of those issues and implement solutions in a test environment and then hopefully further out into the field where we can help with that. strengthening our data and analytical capability in the department. This is very exciting. We are doing analysis that really takes it to the next level and developing the type of information and analytics that we haven't had the capability to do before within the department. The primary roles of the data analytics team is to establish performance metrics, which I'll talk about in just a moment, and produce those actionable reports. And those are the information and the data that we're working on producing for the field so that they can manage their operations better. I also want to point out our data analytics team members have been involved and continue to be involved every step of the way in the development of our quality review tools to make sure that each question that we ask about a case, when we get the results from that and aggregate that data, we can conduct valid analysis with the information. Another main item that was covered in Senate Bill 1326 directed the department to develop and implement a child welfare accountability system, which would measure the health of the child welfare system by circuit annually. We have been working over the last year with our partners, sheriff's offices, CBCs, and CLS to determine what that looks like. We work together to establish target ranges, and we're also going to be working together with how we establish those circuit grades, if you will. And it's been a good time, and we're still working through that process and look forward to your collaboration as well. One thing that's really important to us as a department is to make sure that that scorecard that you see annually by circuit provides a lot of community context. We know that child welfare doesn't operate in a vacuum. There are many social factors that affect the child welfare system. This is a very rough prototype, clearly, that we want to make sure that for a circuit, we understand what the population looks like. What's the child welfare involvement rate? What does it look like in the community related to domestic violence, to substance abuse, poverty, suicide rates? Those things affect the children in the community. So we want to make sure that we give context around that. The rating, though, will be specific to the child welfare system. We have specific metrics that we're looking at for child protective investigations, for case management, children's legal services, and shared system metrics, because we know there are items in the child welfare system that all pieces contributed to. Senate Bill 1326 directed us to have this implemented by July 2021, and we are on that track. We'll collect 12 months of data for those metrics, and the first rating will be issued in the fall of 2020. We currently have metrics in safety, permanency, and well-being for all four of those child welfare functions within a circuit, and we are working on the rating, the weighting and rating, if you will, to work out how we're going to make that annual calculation. Our final team is our performance improvement team that I've alluded to already. This is a small group of expert program improvement facilitators who, when we see an area that has a chronic deficiency in some key metrics or calls us because they're really struggling with something, we can deploy a team, gather up some of the operational staff who are involved in the issue, talk to them, develop root causes for what we're seeing that are causing those issues, validate the solutions that they come up with our data, and then deploy those effective solutions. We're currently in the middle of one of our first performance improvement projects, those safety actions that I mentioned previously related to supervisory guidance, and we're really excited to help the field deploy some solutions that will help solve those. Finally, I just want to show you a diagram that goes through what we like to reference as the full maturation of results-oriented accountability. What we're doing in the department with the new quality office, along with our operations and our program areas, is very collaborative, and it's going to be a cyclical process. We know that the experts in the program offices, they know the research, they have the policy, and they own that piece of it. Operations are where the work really happens. We're looking at their performance and collaborating to analyze their performance, give them tools to help them manage their operations, and work on those performance improvement projects when we see challenges that need to be met. And now I'm glad to turn it over to Deputy Secretary Patty Babcock.
Okay, thank you so much. And we want to make sure we have time for member questions, so we'll we'll move through this. And our next presenter, we're going to move to the next meeting, just so the Florida Institute of Child Welfare will bring them, because we want them to have time. The work they've done is so important, and we can focus on the Senate Bill 1326. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and Vice Chair. And I also, too, want to thank Hillary. I don't see Krista here, but you guys were really instrumental in getting this pushed through. You know, so I'm here to talk about the Office of Well-Being and then the pilots. But before I start, I want to loop back to the quality office. You know, I come from academia, and I'm not sure that folks really understand the significance of what we're trying to do at the department. This is unprecedented. I mean, that we have already reviewed 2,500 cases. There's nowhere else in the country taking this type of approach. So I want to thank everybody that took part in that, because I think we have an opportunity, not just within Florida, but nationally. We have national interest already on what we're doing to really change the way that we work cases throughout the life of the case. So I'm super excited about where we're going, where we're headed, and I think when the first report comes out, I think all of us should be very proud of the work that we all contributed to. So part of the, you know, 1326, there was a very large focus on the workforce, and within that workforce piece is the well-being of our workforce. And so within 1326 was the Stand Up an Office of Well-Being. And so we did stand up an Office of Well-Being, and fortunately or unfortunately, Christine White showed up 2 days before the shutdown for COVID. So she's not walked into the office, but I want to tell you this has not stopped her from doing pretty remarkable work again. Right off the bat, we were asked to do that survey to see where our folks were. The kind of the premise of standing up an Office of Well-Being is that in the field of child welfare, and I would even argue all of our programs, that there has to be a high level of secondary stress, compassion fatigue, and burnout. So we did this survey, and what we found is we really don't have the secondary stress that we thought we had. We have a high rate of burnout, a low rate of secondary stress, and a low rate of a high rate of compassion fatigue. They have compassion satisfaction. What we found, too, very interestingly enough, is the folks that lasted the longest in the department, have been here the longest, actually had the lower rates of secondary stress. So we don't know why. I mean, this is our initial survey. We just sent out another survey and looking at now what's the impact of COVID on all this. Has anything shifted with COVID? The other thing that we did was we did an agency-wide, enterprise-wide well-being survey. We actually had 4,361 respondents. Of those, 990 were specifically in the child welfare program. Very interesting responses there as well. So when we look at general health, mental health, physical health, everybody's doing pretty okay. We had physical health and general health were both at 80%, and our mental health was at 70%, and then our interpersonal social health was 88%, reporting good to excellent. So we really have to think about what is the impact on our folks, and why do we have this high turnover. The next thing that we're doing, and it was in 1326, we found a national model on resilience. And so we will be launching probably in 2 weeks with our supervisors a national training on resilience. It's a 6-month training, and we're going to use it as a train the trainer. We're starting with the supervisors with the hope that we can perpetuate and sustain these good outcomes, if you will. Some other things that we're doing in terms of key initiatives, she's had several workshops and offerings specific to self-care, secondary stress, well-being. She has right now on our teams, because we're all virtual, she has well-being breaks and lunchtime breaks, lunchtime brown bags, if you will, where she's talking about fitness, sleep, work balance, stress management. And she also offers personalized well-being sessions. Right out of the bat,
We realize that EAP is a great way to go, but we also, because of our survey, we had a very high percentage of folks that said they will not use EAP. So I said, you know, we have the substance abuse mental health program. Let's see if we can get some volunteers within the programs to volunteer to just be a staff support network, and sure enough, we did. So we stood up a staff support network where folks within our staff can access somebody, a coworker, if they will, to help them.
I need to ask you maybe to wrap up in 60 seconds, because again, we had 10 minutes set on the agenda for questions, and the Cliff Note version, and then we can follow up. I know we've got some good slides here the members can look at.
Yeah, but. And I think you probably, with the slides, you can get through that, and then I can talk very quickly about the pilots, if you'd like, or we could bring that back. And so for those of you that weren't here last year, we were able to, through 1326 and some proviso, we were able to secure some funding, if you will, appropriate some funding for two pilots, one in Pasco Pinellas, which is Circuit 6, and one in Circuit 13, which is Hillsborough. Circuit 6 received about $3.8 million, and Circuit 13 was $4.3. And what we did is we set up some strategies that they were going to incorporate to change the way their case management is run, and kind of fell into some categories of additional services and supports. And we set some metrics based on, you know, working with our quality office, set six metrics. And within those six metrics, we had a baseline, and we had a baseline dollar amount that went with those. And each quarter, based on the number of metrics that you hit, there's six specific metrics, I can go through them if you'd like, based on the number of metrics that you hit, there's a dollar amount associated with that. So at the end of quarter one, we just had Q1, Circuit 6, which is the Pasco Pinellas, they hit five of the six metrics.
I think we can forward to the last slide.
There you go. And then on Circuit 13, they hit four out of the six. And so we will continue working with them and make sure that each quarter they're hitting their metrics. And if we need to, at the end of the year, we can change those metrics. Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to open up for questions. I really would like to have the board, the committee, to have a chance to engage. I know it's not a lot of time, but is there any questions from the committee? Okay, Representative Killebrew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all the changes and things that have been going on, what has that done to the people in the field? They had to add additional people, kind of reorganize themselves. I'm just curious about how that part was going.
Mr. Chair, great question. So COVID specific, I mean, we've had to be very fluid and dynamic in a number of situations. I'll give you a couple of examples. Outbreak at a hospital, we had to deploy management teams to go in. We had to bring in staff augmentation contracts. The volume of calls that came in for public assistance, you know, we started to, you know, our hold times doubled. It got pretty dicey there. We had to have several. We went from 300 employees to 1,000 just by having folks drop what they're doing and start answering phone calls. So throughout the entirety of COVID, I'm not even getting into your case managers and all that. We have had to be very nimble. Our partners had to be very nimble, and I'm very proud to say we never lost the ability to take care of someone in need throughout the entirety of this, but we definitely had to make some changes on the fly.
Representative Barlman, any follow-up, Representative Killebrew? Good. Representative Barlman?
Yes, the baseline data that was collected on the caseworkers, I was just curious, was that collected, when was it collected, before COVID, after COVID, and have you seen changes, and should you collect more data? Yes.
Go ahead. The well-being?
Well-being on the caseworkers, yes.
That was pre-COVID.
Are you planning to, Chair. Are you planning to go back and collect new data based on what's changed to change the programs as needed?
Mr. Chair? Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. We're in the process of doing that right now.
Fine. Representative Roach?
Thank you, you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for your continued willingness to shine the flashlight in all the dark corners. We appreciate the good work you're doing. Just two, if the chair will indulge me real quick, but I noticed that your metrics focused on circuits. And I know and recognize that we do have some metrics that are measuring CBCs, mostly it's sort of time-in system and time-out, but I'm curious to know if the new metric systems can be used to compare sort of a deeper quality issues within the CBCs themselves.
Great question. Yes, sir, we're gonna have some top-line metrics. As you know, we report to the federal government, and so we are metric-heavy, I'll say that, and what we wanted to illustrate today is that we wanted to work with you all on the health of the system report. And so we are very open to feedback because my vision for these metrics is I want an elected official to be able to very quickly understand what's going on in their community. Here's how the child welfare system is funded in my area. Here's how they're performing. Here's how the indicators on the social issues are driving things, substance abuse rates, neonatal absence, et cetera. And so that, as you can imagine, that could quickly become too much. And so we want to make sure we strike the right balance with you all. And so we wanted to signal today that we're very willing and ready to bring some prototypes in and start that conversation.
One follow-up, Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir, thank you. And then my follow-up would be, do you think that or feel that your agency has the statutory authority that you need to compel changes by providers in the event that you find something where problems are identified? Do you feel you have the statutory authority to compel those changes with the CBCs or other providers?
Yes, sir, I do. There are some other factors that I think are important to note, however. One is, if you have at the end of the day, I'm holding a contract. And so in a contractual relationship, there's a couple things, as we all know, that would drive a level of intensity. Certainly, I can threaten to take the contract, but if this is an area that's underfunded and consistently running a deficit, do I have a market of providers that want to step up and take it? And so you really have to holistically look at the entire situation and rebalance some things in order to create that environment for us to be, you know, truly dynamic contract managers. And I didn't get into all that earlier, but, you know, we tackled a lot of that last session. And so there was some progress made, particularly on trying to shore up some of the areas that were underfunded. That's where those pilots came from. But I will tell you, there's definitely more work to do. Definitely more work to do.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Roth, you're recognized for a motion.
Yes, sir. I'd like to make a motion that we extend for 15 minutes.
The motion seconded by Representative Williams. All in favor, signify by saying it. Yay. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we got 15 more minutes, so. All right. Any more? Rep Fisher. Sorry, I didn't see you way over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is a follow-up to the other one. One of the things that I'll be looking at is procurement and contracting. I mentioned earlier about structures of agencies, and I think Rep Roach and I share a philosophy on a lot of things, and so I appreciated all his questions. Could you illuminate any of the issues with the contracting side or procurement side that we can potentially provide you some help or cover with?
Great question. So fundamentally, I believe we have to get the money right. And so if you have an area that's consistently having to come and approach the legislature for back-of-the-bill funding, kind of one-time emergency money to go into the system, we need to address that. And so last year, we spent a good amount of time working across the system to put a funding formula together where we could at least answer the question, do we think there's enough money in this area of the state based on the number of children, the services that are required, et cetera? And so it's a pretty comprehensive formula. And so we had a pretty good debate about do you need to codify that? And so there wasn't a lot of interest in that. However, we're continuing to use it. And so it would be my, how I plan to approach this, is if I do have some contracts coming up, I would come forward and say, look, I'm about to put this out for bid. Based on our analysis using this formula, it appears to be underfunded. That's gonna impact competition. We've done a lot of work over the summer, sir, to try to gauge interest in bidding on these contracts. We did an RFI statewide, asking folks to respond if their organizations are interested in becoming a lead agency. and really trying to build that competitive marketplace. I think competition has the potential to be a very powerful element in our child welfare system. I really do.
Yeah. Representative Woodson.
Welcome to sit here with me.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Powell. Based on what you reported from the Quality Efforts Office, how are your providers responding to it? Have you seen any resistance? And what are some of the issues that they are most concerned about at this time?
Great question. And so 17 CEOs, 7 sheriffs, attorney general, that's a great question because it's requiring a lot of collaboration across a lot of very powerful people and organizations. I can tell you we spent a lot of time on that last year, and it's one of the reasons I selected Jessica for the role. I knew she could build bridges and bring those folks together. The collaboration has been real, not symbolic. Those organizations actually helped put the Life of the Case tool together. I'm not going to, you know, try to fake that. Yes, you do have moments that are intense. Folks, especially with a child welfare case where the stakes are so high, folks don't like their decision-making to be second-guessed and things of that nature. But I think everybody is understanding the true intent and the spirit within which this is being deployed. And I am very happy to report that everyone has responded quite well. And so we've had our first quality collaboration sessions where we all get together each quarter. Those initial ones have gone, and we've gotten very good feedback on how those have been received. So I will say, yes, change is hard. There was a little bit of resistance, but they've been able to work through it, and I feel really good about where we are right now.
And what are some of the concerns that they have? Excuse me, Mr. Chair. What are some of the most concerns that your providers have?
I think to characterize it, you're always going to have a concern that an independent group looking at a case that isn't close to it, didn't go in the house, didn't talk to the sister, the brother, et cetera, that they don't really truly understand the situation and they're passing judgment on it. And so that's something that we have to work to overcome. And I will say that we've been using, have you heard of a CERT team? Those have been in place for a while. It has a similar model with similar dynamics and similar sort of pushback and resistance. It's been very successful, and we built off that model, and it's continuing to go forward. So, I have nothing but positives to give you right now.
I'll be quick, Mr. Chair, just one more. You reported that 5% of the child welfare cases are reviewed. We assuming the 95% does not get reviewed. Do you have any plan, any intent to review a higher percentage?
I would if I could. Resources is going to be, you know, part of how big that aperture is that we can push through. But we're going to be constantly looking for ways to check in on cases. Obviously, supervisors are reviewing every case as well. So there is some review built into every case. But the external review is going to be able to let us take a snapshot of what's going on. And understand if we have systemic issues. She mentioned that we were able to deploy a performance improvement team, for instance. You know, if we're looking at a subset of cases and we're starting to see consistent things, we're able to deploy and focus on our training, messaging across the system, et cetera. We have also been able to, we've been presented with different policy ideas on changing policies in different ways. We've deployed the quality teams to go out and find out, are we ready for that? And so we had a pretty big policy idea that we were kicking around. They came back and said, we're not ready. So we're going to use them in a number of different ways to understand what's going on the ground. But to your point directly, the 95% of cases, that will be a resource issue.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank Representative you. Koster.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation. And before I ask my question, I'll have you know both of your pilots are covered by my district. Okay. Both of your pilot programs. So I would love to talk offline if you've got Absolutely. Questions or if there's any way I could be of any assistance to you. You mentioned the life of case review. Is there a mechanism for people outside the department to either request or recommend a life of case review? And if so, how does that work? And, you know, if a family member sees something or a community partner sees something, or how does that, is there a mechanism for that?
Go ahead.
We are always open to feedback, and so I can tell you, I get those kind of emails and calls every day. I don't think we've talked about that, a different way to request a review of a case. So that's a very interesting idea, and I'm open to that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about it.
Absolutely, and I will tell you just in terms of areas of the state that have been struggling, if you are in an area where the resources are low, the lead agency has had some struggles, and so it's a big area of focus for us at the department, and so we're very interested in seeing how those pilots work. The notion for the pilots was, you know, if we put more money in, would things start to change? Is it a resource issue? Is it a performance issue, et cetera? And so we're trying to get to the bottom of that question, and I'm happy to report that the metrics have started to turn in the right way, so we were excited to see that.
Great.
Okay, I don't see any other questions. I do want to point out to the committee, and as we move forward, Senate Bill 1326 is very important, has been very important to the subcommittee. It was the Children, Families, and Senior Subcommittee, PCB, last year, proposed committee bill. And it was run by our chair, Representative Ponder, and carried in the Senate by Senate President Simpson. So that highlights the significance and the importance. So its key provisions of workforce were developed based on the work of the Florida Institute of Child Welfare. We were going to hear them. I'm so glad we're able to spend a little more time on this, because I think this kind of helps lays the framework for to the committee on the status of that particular bill. We do have a few more minutes. It's 3:18. We're going to 3:15. I'll give you an opportunity to maybe miss some of the points you weren't able to get before.
Mr. Chair, there's a lot of activity going on. I don't know what our availability is. We are in the process, and have been for the last several years, of trying to move more of our effort and our resources upstream before crisis occurs. And so we had set a very ambitious goal to reduce the number of families in crisis in Florida by 20% by 2021. I'm happy to report we were well on our way to achieving that goal when COVID hit. And so obviously the numbers have increased greatly. And so the journey to become a prevention-based agency is something that I hope we could continue to discuss and talk about, and where we start to re-engineer our efforts and how we get involved in families' lives. It touches all the programs at DCF. It includes an outreach to the faith-based community across the state. We're trying to transform our entire operation inside of the economic self-sufficiency program to more care coordination instead of just how fast can we pay a benefit. Are we meeting your need on why you need the benefit in the first place? And so these are pretty radical shifts inside of DCF that I would hope we could come back and talk about it some other time. But I appreciate the support. Chair Ponder was amazing last year. Like I said, I wanted to highlight it was a big deal. A lot of good work is happening and ongoing. There's still a ton of work to do. So I look forward to working with you, sir.
Thank you so much. I as well. Thank you, Secretary Popple, and we're looking forward to the upcoming session. And that being said, I think this concludes our agenda for today. And again, I look forward to working with this committee on the issues that they're concerned, and I have an open door. Please feel free to reach out, either here in Tallahassee or when we're back in our districts. I'll be available for you on that. And on that note, Representative Valdez moves that we rise. And without objection, upon the motion of Representative Valdez, the meeting is adjourned.